Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
All right, we're on the record. State of Arizona versus Daybell. CR 2021-001704. State's counsel's present. The defendant's present with advisory counsel. Is your paralegal or investigator going to join you today?
Yes, she's on her way as far as I know, Your Honor.
All right, have you received some motions that the state filed since we were last here on Thursday?
I just did this morning, actually.
Let's make sure you have them all. So last Friday I received from the state, it was an email sent from the state to my judicial assistant, copied on the email where the advisory counsel's as well as I think your paralegal. Is your paralegal Anna Ramirez?
Yes.
Okay, so she was copied on that. And that had to do with the subpoena that was served on Bobby Vallow. Have you seen that?
I have not seen it. I did hear about it, but I did not see it.
So we have that to address. We have a motion in limine regarding the questioning of police. Have you received that one?
I just received that one, yes.
State's third motion to preclude defendant's witnesses. Have you seen that?
I just have those two, but not the first one that you mentioned.
Okay, how about motion in limine regarding the testimony of a video observed by Janice Cox and Summer Shiflett?
I do not have that one.
All right. Does advisory counsel have a copy of that one?
No, Judge.
Here's a copy.
Okay. Are any of these issues something I need to deal with for this morning between 10 and noon?
Judge, the only thing is I would like to have, at the very least, those subpoenas that have been filed sealed since they are in violation right now of victims' rights.
It is, in addition to the one on Robert Bobby Vallow, which other one?
The state sent an updated. We also, Brandon Boudreaux is not a victim in this case, but he is a victim in the CR 2022, and his subpoena was also filed with the clerk's office.
All right, it's ordered sealing those two subpoenas. Are there other, the issue regarding the questioning of police or detectives about why there wasn't an arrest immediately or why it took a while for the case to be charged. Is that something it's going to come up this morning?
No.
Okay. Let's deal with, I want to give you a chance to make sure you read all these. And so that's something maybe we can deal with at about 1:15 today or later this afternoon. But do we have our jury? My staff is out there. I know one juror was running late. Do you want to have your next witness waiting in the back?
Sure.
Why don't we do that? Do you have everyone?
We're still missing one. I'm about to call them right now.
Okay. Still missing a juror. So I think we're going to have to wait a few minutes to see if this juror is going to... Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. My staff said that he's coming through security right now. He may have forgotten we were trying to start at 10. Well, let's take this couple minutes while he's on his way up. I had asked the advisory council and the state regarding our second trial if they'd be willing to forego the first day or the Wednesday of their annual conferences for the second trial. Is that something that we can sort of hammer down the schedule on for the next trial?
So the judge was talking about the 28th of May, correct?
No, June. The judicial conference is June 25, 26, 27. So I'm talking about June 25th, half trial.
I'm fine with that.
It's fine with us also, Judge.
Okay, so... And if we, I don't know what happened last time, but I think advisory council took the remote questionnaires that the jurors answered. Did you take them to the jail and go over them in advance, or you didn't? You did? That's a yes?
Yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
So the remote questionnaire would be similar to the one we did for this trial. It would go out the week of... probably May 19th, and we can set the cutoff date, maybe the 23rd, to give the parties a chance to go over, and then we would meet to go over those remote answers on May 29th, the afternoon, 1:30 on, and then we would bring in the walk-in jurors and in-person follow-up voir dire for May 30th, and anticipate opening statements and starting the evidence on Monday, June 2nd. I'd like to go June 2nd through Friday the 6th. I'd like to go June 9th and maybe part of Friday morning into the noon hour, the 13th. So 2 full weeks there. The next week will be dark. Then 3 days, June 23rd through 25th, and then June 30th through June 3rd. That's over 3 full weeks of trial. I think depending on how much longer this trial lasts, we'll be able to tell if that will be enough time or not. So I'm just putting that out there for planning purposes for everyone. Is our juror here yet? Yeah.
I know for March 20th, you said the afternoon, guys. Recommend the morning just because we have 3 if you're going to.
Which date?
For the pre-screening on March 20.
Not March, May.
May 29th, sorry. We can go in the morning. If we have 300, I know we took most of the morning on for this trial to go through 200 or 160. I just am concerned we only do it in the afternoon of the 29th.
Here's my issue is I was scheduled to be out of state. And I'm actually going to fly back early that morning to get this done. So we can start at 12:30 or something like that. But I don't think I can get back early enough. There may be additional publicity issues as a result of this trial, but I still think 300 jurors would be enough. Does the state want to weigh in on that?
I think that's enough, Your Honor. I think we'll follow the same method of just striking anyone that has any concept.
All right. Does the defendant want to weigh in on any of that?
I agree.
Okay. Is our juror here? All right. Our juror is here, so let's get started. We'll bring in the jury. Please be seated. The state, the jury is now present. The state can call its next witness.
Thank you.
All right, sir, come on up. You're going to stand right in front here and be sworn in.
You do solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
All right, you can have a walk around the court reporter, have a seat to my left.
My name is Derek Baumgartner. I am a medical examiner at the Maricopa County Medical Examiner's Office.
What do you do there?
So I perform autopsies. I determine cause and manner of death for individuals who die under our jurisdiction in Maricopa County, run toxicology reports, and like today, testify in court occasionally.
Can you tell us about your education to become a medical examiner?
Sure. I completed a Bachelor of Arts degree in American History at the University of Arizona in 2005. In 2013, I got my Doctor of Medicine degree from the University of Illinois in Chicago. From 2013 to 2017, I did an anatomic and clinical pathology residency at Loyola University Medical Center. And then I did a forensic pathology fellowship in Denver from 2017 to 2018.
And when did you start working here at the Maricopa County Dental Center?
I started in July of 2018.
Are you board certified in any areas?
Yes.
Can you tell us what areas?
I am board certified in anatomic pathology, clinical pathology, and forensic pathology.
Let's start with, what does board certification mean?
So board certification happens after completion of residency or fellowship. It consists of, in terms of anatomic and clinical pathology, a 16-hour multiple choice exam split over 2 days, and then in forensic pathology, it's an 8-hour exam on one day.
And can you tell us what forensic and anatomical pathology are?
Sure. Anatomic pathology basically studies tissues, biopsies, surgical specimens, sometimes whole bodies, to diagnose disease processes. Clinical pathology is more of a laboratory thing. Think of blood or tissues or other bodily fluids that are tested in a laboratory setting. Also deals with lab management and regulation compliance. And then forensic pathology is basically studying what the cause and manner of death is for a person.
Do you have to have any ongoing training as a medical examiner?
Yes.
Is that something you do annually?
Yes.
So you told us that you perform autopsies. Can you tell us what that is? What is an autopsy?
So an autopsy is an examination of the external and internal aspects of the body to essentially find out why a person died.
And do you write a report after you complete your autopsy?
I do.
Does each autopsy of the Maricopa County medical examiners have a case number associated with it?
Yes.
And are there also photographs that are taken in conjunction with visual observations as well as any relevant internal injuries that you know during the autopsy?
Yes.
Thank you. I want to talk to you about July 13th of 2019. Did you perform an autopsy on a Leland Charles Anthony Vallo at about 8 in the morning?
I did.
And was that associated with the OME case number 19-05897?
It was.
You told us that were photographs taken sort of throughout the process of your autopsy, correct?
Correct.
And if I can have my paralegal bring up to the witness 152 through 179 that have previously been shown to defendant. Doctor, do you recognize those exhibits 152 through 179?
I do.
And are they all photographs of different aspects of the autopsy that you performed on Leland Charles Anthony Vallo?
They are.
Your Honor, the state will move to admit 152 through 179.
Any objection?
No objections.
152 through 179 are admitted, may be published.
Thank you. So, when you first are assigned a case, do you begin with some type of visual inspection overall of the individual?
Yes.
I'm going to put up Exhibit 152 here. In every autopsy, is a photo like this taken?
Yes.
Why is that?
For identification purposes.
And is that the OME number we are talking about that is associated and that we see in all these photographs?
Yes.
When you were first beginning this autopsy, do you take measurements of the height and weight of Charles Vallo?
Yes.
In this case, did you note those in your report?
I did.
Do you recall that information off the top of your head right now?
I do.
What was his height and weight?
Height was 71 and a half inches. Weight was 207 pounds.
So just under 6 feet tall?
Yes.
As you were doing an external review of Charles, did you note any injuries to the front of his face?
No.
Did you look at the back of his head?
I did.
Did you note any abrasions or contusions?
No.
Can you tell us what does abrasion mean?
An abrasion is a scrape that takes off the top layer of skin.
And a contusion?
It's otherwise known as a bruise. It's a breaking of blood vessels that causes blood to pool underneath the skin and in the soft tissues.
So, if we have seen photos of Charles Vallo laying supine on the floor of the residence, did you note any abrasions or contusions at the back of his head that would have been consistent with him being shot and falling straight back?
No.
I'm going to put up 153. As you were looking at Mr. Vallo, were you looking for abrasions on any other aspects of his body?
Yes.
Did you note any on his chest area?
Yes.
Where did you note those?
on the sternal chest and on the left abdomen.
And so external chest, can you point out to us where that is?
The sternal chest is sort of right in the middle of the chest.
So are we talking in this area? And I'm going to pull it in closer. So if we see this wound here, where are we talking in relation to that?
So surrounding the defect.
Okay. Were you able to make any determinations as to whether those contusions or those abrasions actually were made at or near the time of his death?
Yes.
Okay. And what was your conclusion?
That they were perimortem or just around the time of death.
Put up some photographs of Mr. Vallow's hands. Do you look to an individual's hands to see if there are any injuries on those?
Yes, so, yes, we do.
Standard for your autopsy procedure?
Yes.
Pull this back out again. What do we see here in Exhibit 155?
It looks to be one of Mr. Vallow's hands.
And as we look at 156 and 157, would that be consistent then with his right hand?
Yes.
And did you note any abrasions to his right hand?
Not that I recall.
159, 158, did you note a little bit of abrasion on his left hand?
Yes, I did.
And a little bit more here in his fingers?
Yes.
On this hand that we see in 160, did you note any blood transfer onto his left hand?
Yes, there was apparent blood on his left hand.
When you were looking at the other portions of his hands, did you note any other blood on those?
No.
And again, 161 and 162, other portions of his hand, no other abrasions or contusions were observed?
No.
And no other blood transfer on those?
No.
Mr. Vallow was wearing a watch at the time, correct?
He was.
When the medical examiner is called out to a scene, do you go out there?
I do not.
Is someone from your office sent out there?
They are.
And are police basically told, to the extent possible, do not touch the body until someone from the medical examiner arrives?
Correct.
So when someone arrives at the medical examiner's office, are they still wearing whatever clothes they have on?
Typically, yes.
And if they have any jewelry or affects on, those are typically left on them as well?
Correct.
So in 163, is that a photograph then of the watch that he was wearing?
Yes.
Did you note any damage to that watch, cracked face or anything like that?
I did not, no.
Put up Exhibit 154, just so it orients better. What are we seeing here?
These are Mr. Vallow's lower extremities.
And did you note any abrasions or contusions on his legs?
Yes.
Where did you note those?
On both knees.
Were you able to make any determination as to whether or not those occurred at or near the time of death?
They appear to be perimortem as well.
I'm going to put up Exhibit 164. As you're visually looking at Mr. Vallow's body, did you observe a defect to his chest?
I did.
Is that what we see here in Exhibit 164?
Yes.
What did you note that was?
An entrance gunshot wound.
Okay. And 165, is that a closer up of that?
It is.
And 166, is that, again, another close up of that?
Yes.
How do you know that that was an entrance wound?
It has characteristics consistent with an entrance wound. It is oval in shape. It also has a peripheral rim of abrasion. And there appears to be a punctate or a small little red abrasions surrounding the wound as well.
All right, so when you are looking at gunshot wounds, are you trying to always determine if it's an entrance or an exit wound?
Yes.
And so you're looking for things that are normal and consistent throughout all entrance wounds?
Yes.
And in this case, you also noted something about some red abrasions around the edge. What is that?
There is a red abrasion around the defect or the hole. And it's a little bit eccentric on, if you think of it as a clock face, from about the 8 o'clock to 12 o'clock positions, that indicates that the projectile was coming in at an angle, and it kind of scrapes away the skin as it enters. There are also abrasions on the opposite side. They are much smaller and look almost like pinpricks. That could be consistent with what's known as stippling, which is when gunpowder strikes the skin after a gun is fired.
Okay. Can you tell us, when you're looking at an entrance wound like this and you're looking for, you said stippling, what is soot versus stippling?
Soot is combusted gunpowder, so it's like a black powder, while stippling is caused by, as I mentioned, partially burned or unburned gunpowder that hits the skin.
Does it basically burn the skin when it hits it?
It could, but it's typically, it causes an abrasion, which is just a scraping away of the skin because it's hitting the skin at such a high velocity.
Okay. When you are looking then at this entrance wound that we see in 166 that was in the chest, you noticed what appeared to be consistent with stippling. In your report, did you use the word stippling, do you recall?
I typically don't. I don't think I did in this case.
Did you describe what you saw?
Yes.
And photograph it?
Yes.
Okay. When you are looking at the presence of stippling, does that give you any insight into the distance from the muzzle to the gunshot wound?
It does.
And can you tell us what that tells you about the distance between the muzzle and the gunshot wound?
Typically, a gun needs to be test fired to determine the exact sort of range that it will impart stippling to the skin. But if you look at textbooks, for a handgun, typically the range is, you know, an inch to up to 4 or 5 feet.
Okay. The closer that the gun muzzle is to the person, does that increase the amount of stippling that you would observe?
Likely, yes.
Would that also, the closer the end of the muzzle to the person, would that increase the likelihood of seeing soot?
It would.
Okay. So here you did not see soot, though?
I did not, no.
Okay. So this, have you ever indicated that for this type of stippling that you observed, you believed it to be anywhere from 2 to 4 feet?
I did, yes.
Okay. And is that because there's not as dense of an amount of stippling observed at this entrance wound?
Correct.
Okay. Now, did you recover a projectile from this wound?
I did not.
So there was an exit wound associated with that?
Yes.
Showing you 167. Where was the exit wound associated with this gunshot wound to the chest?
So it's on the thoracic back, which is like the middle of the back.
I'm going to put 168 and up. Is that a closer up of that exit wound?
Yes.
Okay. And put up 169, is that again closer of this?
It is.
How are you able to determine that that's an exit wound?
It has characteristics of an exit wound. Typically, exit wounds are not round like entrance wounds. They will sometimes be slit-like, as it is in this case, and typically they're a little bit larger than the entrance wound.
Now, when you are documenting injuries, do you measure the distance from the head to the entrance wound as well as the head to the exit wound?
Yes.
In this case, what was the distance from Charles's head to the entrance wound that we saw in his chest?
I believe it was 18 and 3/4 inches.
Okay. And can you tell us, or do you recall what the distance was from Charles's head to this exit wound on his back?
I believe it was 20 inches.
So about an inch and a quarter difference.
Yes.
When you are performing an autopsy, do you advise what the wound path is?
Yes.
What do you mean by wound path?
The wound path is what the projectile encounters as it passes through the body.
What was the wound path for this gunshot wound that entered Charles's chest and exited his back?
So it passed through the skin of the chest, the sternum, which is the breastbone, the pericardium, which is a sac that surrounds the heart. It then hit two chambers of the heart, the right atrium and the left ventricle. And then it passed through the ninth thoracic vertebral body and exited the soft tissue and skin of the left back.
So for lay people, it went through Charles's heart?
Yes.
Was that wound immediately fatal?
Not immediately, no.
Could Charles have lived for some period of time after this?
A short period of time, but yes.
Are you able to say when someone is struck in the heart, could they live from seconds up to minutes?
Seconds up to a very few minutes, yes.
Have you testified previously or indicated previously in an interview that it could be up to maybe 2 minutes?
Yes.
When a person is shot in the heart such as this, could Charles have still spoken for that time period?
Yes.
Could he have moved after that bullet went through his heart?
He could have, yes.
So would it be possible for him to reach up and touch where he was shot with his left hand?
Yes.
Given the abrasions to Charles's knees, is it possible that he fell to his knees after he was shot?
It's possible, yes.
Would those abrasions on his knees be consistent with someone falling to their knees?
Yes.
When you are performing an autopsy, do you... let me first talk. As you are going through the... description of the path, the wound path. You talked about the trajectory going through the ninth thoracic vertebra. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'm going to show you exhibit 171. Can you describe for us what we are seeing here?
That is a trajectory rod passing through the defect that was created in that ninth thoracic vertebral body.
So this rod that you're using is helping to show the path of that bullet through Charles's body.
Correct.
And just to orient those of us who haven't seen a person this way, can you tell us, is Charles's head up here?
It is.
And so this would be down towards his legs at
Correct.
The bottom.
Yes.
Okay. When you are talking about the injuries to an individual, do you also determine the trajectory of that bullet through the individual?
I do, yes.
So for this wound to Charles's chest that exited his back, what was the trajectory?
It was front to back, right to left, and slightly downward.
How are you determining that trajectory? Is there a modem that you use that's standard for all autopsies?
Yes, through measurements of the entrance wound and exit wound, and then also observing what organs and tissue have damage from the bullet.
So let me go back to Exhibit 164. You're looking at this entrance wound here, correct?
Yes.
And the exit wound that we see in 168 to determine that front to back, and then you said right to left and slightly downward?
Yes.
So the downward is the 1¼-inch difference that you saw from the head measurement?
Correct.
Could that downward angle be the result of someone just holding a gun at a slightly downward angle?
Yes, that's possible.
Could it be also from just the arm itself moving up or down some?
Yes.
Or a size difference between people?
Yes.
You're not here because to tell us which one of those it was, correct?
I can't determine that, no.
As you were performing the autopsy of Mr. Vallow, did you note another gunshot wound to Mr. Vallow?
I did, yes.
And I'm putting up Exhibit 172. Where was the other gunshot wound that you observed on Mr. Vallow?
On his left abdomen.
And do we see in 172, is that what we see sort of above and to the side of his belly button?
Yes.
Were you able to tell what we see in 172 here, whether that was an entrance or exit wound?
I was.
And what was this?
This was an entrance gunshot wound.
And again, were you following the same view of looking at all the same aspects of this wound to determine that it was an entrance wound?
Correct.
In this entrance wound, did you note any stippling?
I did not.
Any soot?
No.
So would that tell you that the individual or the muzzle of that gun was more than 4 or 5 feet away from the victim?
Most likely, yes.
Did you recover a projectile from this gunshot wound?
I did not.
So there was an exit wound associated with it?
Correct.
I put up Exhibit 175. Where was the exit wound?
It was on the back of the left shoulder.
And is that what we see in Exhibit 175 here?
Correct.
I'm going to put some closer up photographs, 176 and 177. What did you note about this exit wound?
This exit wound appears a little bit atypical. It has characteristics of a supported or a shored exit wound.
What is a shored exit wound?
A shored exit wound occurs when the body is pressed up against a firm surface while the bullet is exiting the skin.
Does that cause sort of this different tearing that we see going on here in that exit wound?
It does.
If a person was, for instance, laying on the floor when they were shot, would you expect to see a short exit wound in that situation?
I would.
When you're talking about something pressed up against the skin, have you ever seen a short wound from someone wearing a t-shirt?
I have not.
Have you seen other short wounds in your experience?
I have, yes.
Approximately how many have you seen in your years of working?
I mean, they're relatively rare, so maybe less than 50.
When you were looking at this exit wound on Charles Vallow's left shoulder, was the injury itself what you would call sort of a typical short wound?
This is textbook worthy.
Now, just like the other wound, did you determine the wound path for this gunshot wound that entered Charles Vallow's abdomen and exited his left shoulder?
Yes.
What was the wound path for that for this shot?
So the bullet passed through the skin and soft tissues of the left abdomen. It then hit the left lung. It then hit the back part of the left fourth rib, and then exited the soft tissue and skin of the left shoulder.
So to be clear, the left fourth rib, is that in the front of him or his back? Where is that located?
In this case, it struck the posterior or the back part of the left fourth rib.
Is that sort of in the location where we see the exit wound right there?
The exit wound is a little bit above the fourth rib.
You talked about sort of the soft tissue. So when this bullet was exiting, did it sort of hit both the rib and the connective tissue between the ribs?
Yes.
Did you also measure the distance from Charles's head to the entrance wound on the abdomen?
I did.
What was that distance?
I believe it was 27 inches.
And did you measure the distance from the top of Charles's head to the exit wound on his left shoulder?
I did.
What was that?
I believe it was 14 inches.
So the prior shot had a 1¼-inch difference. Was this one 13 inches?
Yes.
So more than a foot difference between the entrance and exit?
Correct.
Did you determine the trajectory for this wound?
I did.
What was that trajectory?
In this case, it was front to back, right to left, and upward.
Okay. Did you also use trajectory rods in this wound to help better describe that trajectory?
I did.
Put up exhibit 179. Can you orient us first on what we're seeing here?
So the placard with the case number is positioned towards the head, and then the opposite is positioned towards the feet.
When you perform an autopsy, how do you open up the individual?
It's called a thoracoabdominal incision. It's, you've probably seen it on TV as the Y incision.
So what we see here is that sort of the abdomen of Mr. Vallow?
Yes.
Okay. And what we see here is that his back?
Yes.
And is this the spine?
Yes.
So does this reflect then the entrance being down at this portion of the body and the exit in that up left shoulder?
Yes.
So in this case, were both gunshot wounds front to back?
They were.
Were both gunshot wounds right to left?
Yes.
The gunshot wound to Charles's chest was slightly downward?
Correct.
And the gunshot wound to Charles's abdomen was upward?
Yes.
The gunshot wound to Charles's chest that exited his back was not short?
No, it was not.
But the gunshot wound that entered Charles's abdomen and exited his left shoulder was short?
Correct.
Doctor, given the trajectory that you observed, that from the gunshot wound to Charles's abdomen that exited his left shoulder, and the fact that the gunshot wound was short, would that be consistent with the shooter standing somewhere near Mr. Vallow's feet and firing at Charles Vallow as he was laying on the floor?
Yes, that's certainly possible.
Now, you told us that you don't go out to the scene, right?
I do not, no.
So you would not have seen if there were any defects on the floor consistent with a bullet strike underneath Mr. Vallow?
I did not.
If you were advised that there was a defect on the floor that was consistent with a bullet strike underneath Charles Vallow's left shoulder, would that further support the theory that he was laying on the floor there causing that sword wound when he was shot?
It would, yes.
When an autopsy is performed on anyone, is blood collected to be tested for toxicology?
If we can get it, yes.
Was that done here?
It was.
Were there any drugs found in Charles Vallow's system?
No drugs were reported positive on toxicology.
No alcohol found?
No.
Based upon your autopsy of Leland Charles Anthony Vallow, what did you determine was the cause of death?
Multiple gunshot wounds.
Thank you. The state has no other questions, Your Honor.
Cross.
Baumgartner, you did a toxicology report in this case?
I sent blood for toxicology, yes.
And what did you test for? What substances did you test for in that toxicology report?
There are 16 or 20 substances that are tested. Typical drugs of abuse, a limited amount of therapeutic medications, and then alcohol, methanol, acetone, and isopropanol, I believe.
But not generally like someone's regular medications, like for high blood pressure or something like that?
That would not show up on this test, no.
And if someone was taking testosterone, that wouldn't show up on there?
It would not, no.
Human growth hormone would not show up on there?
No.
So just basically the substances that you mentioned?
Yes.
Are typically tested. And then if law enforcement were to ask you to test for something specific, then you would do that as well. Is that correct?
It depends.
On what?
The case type, what their request was, if it's even possible.
Okay. So if they were to say, we want you to test for a certain something, you would say if you could or couldn't?
Probably, yes.
Okay. And is that typical in your experience?
Is what typical?
For them to ask for things other than what you normally, the normal 16 things that you test for?
That would be atypical.
Okay. So normally they don't ask you to do that in a common manner?
They do not, no.
Okay. And so in this case, you did just test for the typical things and no other requests were made. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. As far as the abrasions on Charles' knees, could those have been, you said that they were consistent with having, been close to the time of death, is that correct?
They had that general appearance, yes.
And so those abrasions could have been caused by a scuffle before he was shot, is that correct?
Yes.
And not necessarily falling forward onto his knees?
Correct.
And then the abrasions on his hands as well?
What about them?
That they could have been caused from a scuffle beforehand?
Yes.
Okay. I know that the state asked you if it was consistent with him with the second shot, the shot to the abdomen, that it was possible that he could have been shot on the floor. Is that correct?
Correct.
But would it also be possible that he could have been falling when that shot happened as well and then hit the floor?
Not really. If he was falling and still passing through air, not yet having hit the ground, that would not have caused a short wound.
So if he had hit the ground and bounced on the ground from the first shot, as the second shot was traveling, that could not be possible that he hit the ground when that shot was exiting the shoulder?
He would have had to have been on a firm surface to create that short wound.
And it could not be caused by tight clothing?
Tight clothing and short wounds is typically like a supportive garment, like a belt or a bra. In my experience, I've never seen it with like a t-shirt or anything like that.
Are you familiar with bamboo clothing?
I am not, no.
Or how tough that material would be?
I am not.
Okay. That's all I have, Your Honor.
All right, redirect.
Doctor, if clothing like a t-shirt, bamboo, or whatever they're made of would have caused a short wound, would you have expected to see the short wound also to the other exit?
Certainly if both exits were covered by that shirt, yes.
So if the person is wearing a t-shirt that covered his back and shoulder?
Yes.
And if that type of fabric somehow was restrictive enough or tight enough or stiff enough to cause that pressure, then it would have caused a short wound to both exits.
I would expect that, yes.
But you didn't see that here?
No.
Only one short wound?
Correct.
The other exit, not at all?
No.
You were asked a lot about different drugs. Was there anything about Mr. Vallow's autopsy that indicated that his cause of death was anything other than the result of multiple gunshot wounds?
No.
Thank you. No other questions.
Are there any questions for this witness from a member of the jury? I do see at least one question coming up.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand-new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand-new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand-new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand-new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.